Saving on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block, ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Nolan Xavier Wells cooked his mother a baked salmon dinner on the evening of July 3rd. Christine Wansley had a long day at work, and her 18-year-old son wanted to do something nice for her before he headed out for the night. He was sleeping at a friend's house. In the morning, they were going out to Horn Island for the 4th of July. And Christine hugged her son goodnight. She will never hug him again. The next morning, Nolan and three friends from high school took a boat 10 miles off the Mississippi Gulf course to Horn Island. And if you haven't heard of it, picture this, a federally protected barrier island with no buildings, no running water, no cell service, no staff, and no way to get there or leave except by private boat. It is a popular local spot on holidays. You've probably seen pictures of it by now. It looks like a paradise. Nolan had been there before on the 4th of July, the beach at the northwest tip. It was packed. Boats along the shoreline, young adults drinking, swimming, hanging out of the sand like they have forever. It's the summer before everybody goes off. When I was first absorbing this story, it kind of made me think of, for those of us of a certain age in our 30s, 40s, American Pie. Remember that movie? Summer before you go off. Crazy things happen. Not this crazy. But that's to give you an idea of the environment, if you will, of that point in everyone's life and what's going on. That's the energy. Okay? To kind of set the scene there. In photos from the boat that day, Nolan towers over his friends at 6'1". Arms draped around their shoulders, big smile, blue swim trunks and sunglasses. He was from Ocean Springs, Mississippi, a coastal town just east of Biloxi, a wide receiver at Southwest Mississippi Community College, good swimmer, standout athlete, due back at school for football training on Monday. His best friend, Javon Williams, tried to get on the same boat, but it was at capacity. Javon took a different boat and met the group on the island. When they met up on the beach, Nolan told Javon he loved him, you know. Love you, man. So good to see, you know, that love, camaraderie, the feeling you have with friends. 18 years old, 4th of July, standing on the sand with his best friend, and he says those words. Hold on to it, because it's going to mean something different by the end, maybe. Nolan's friends say he was last seen around 3 p.m. He'd been talking to a young woman named Katie on the beach, allegedly. Around 4:30, the group left the island without him. The explanation came days after from Ashley Cole, the mother of one of the friends, who posted on Facebook that the boat had a bilge pump issue and was taking on water. She said Nolan made a decision to stay on the island and return inland later with another group of friends. I want to preface this in this piece here, okay? This is the current information as of this recording. Now, could you be watching this and more information has come out? Without a doubt. As of this recording, here's where the alleged, I don't want to say facts, but the allegations, I guess, sit. The stories, the alleged stories sit. Okay. I need to stop here because this is where the story starts falling apart. And I want to be clear about what we might be looking at here. I don't know. Could it be a conspiracy? Maybe. Is it an organized criminal act? Probably not. What it looks like to me, and look, I am fine with being wrong. But my gut, as of right now, it looks like a group of young people who let something happen or were involved in something that went wrong and panicked. And everything that's come out since looks exactly like what it looks like when people are more afraid of the consequences than they are sorry about the outcome. Could I be wrong? Yes. My opinion doesn't really matter. But when I'm looking at the facts, looking at this story, looking at it all, people who don't want to be accountable is what comes to my gut. Could it go darker? Could it go worse? Sure. I hope to God it doesn't. But if it does, we're going to hear it and we're going to talk about it. But as of this moment, incompetence often does look like conspiracy. Incompetence being not wanting to be held responsible for anything. Anything that might put somebody on the wrong end of the law on this. Does it go worse? Does it get darker? Again, we don't know. But we'll certainly talk about it should those facts pop into the ether. The story they told doesn't hold up. Nolan's parents don't buy a word of it. His father, Elmore Wansley, said it plainly. We always taught him, if you go with a group, you stay with the group. Christine said she can't fathom why her son would choose to stay alone on an uninhabited island. No phone, no way to call for help, no guaranteed ride home. That wasn't who Nolan was. Everyone who knew him says the same thing. But the story doesn't just not make sense to his parents, it contradicts the only other witness, Ben Crump, a civil rights attorney now representing the family, laid out a contradiction that should be the single most important fact in the case. The young woman, Katie, told Crump's team that Nolan said he was going back to the boat with the boys. The boys told investigators that Nolan said he was staying with the girl. Those two statements both cannot be true. Somebody is lying about that last conversation that they had with Nolan Wells. And it's not a small discrepancy. That's the kind of lie you tell when you're trying to explain why you left someone behind. Now, the reason for the lie, covering someone's ass or something darker? I don't know the answer to that question. And I'm not accusing anyone of anything. But again, objects in the rearview mirror may be closer than they appear. Let's look at the phone. After Nolan was reported missing, Christine pulled up Life 360 to track his device. If you're a parent, you know what Life 360 is. At least I hope you do. If you don't, go check it out. It's not an advertisement for it, but as a parent, I happen to love it. It wasn't on the island. The Life 360, basically, if you're not familiar with it, it's GPS. It tells you where that device is at any time. And typically, you know, with a teenager, if there's a device, that's where the person is. Or with anybody, for that matter. Unless you lost it. It's a great tool for finding your phone. It wasn't on the island. His phone was not on the island. It wasn't in the water. It was sitting at the house of a family that owned the boat. Nobody called her to say they had it. Nobody brought it to her. She had to track her missing son's phone with an app and discover it herself. Your friend doesn't come home from the island. He's missing. You have his phone and you don't call his mother. You don't drive it over. You don't say anything. Is that an oversight or is that a choice? When Christine finally got the phone, she opened Nolan's Snapchat. He had two accounts. Both were completely empty. No photos, no videos, no safe snaps from the packed 4th of July beach party where dozens of people were filming everything. Well, maybe he just didn't take photos or video. Maybe, but is that a deviation from behavior of what he normally does? Chris Dean says Nolan always made videos when he was out and having fun. Always documented everything. Her reaction when she saw the empty accounts, that can't be. An 18-year-old at a holiday party didn't take a single photo? I don't believe that. His mother doesn't believe that. And I don't know that you should either, because that's not what an empty Snapchat means. It means somebody went through that phone before the family got it. Maybe. The Life360 location data didn't match what his friend's Snapchat locations were showing that night either. Different locations, different signals. Crump has said the family believes messages and images were deliberately deleted. A video has also gone viral. Millions of views. A voice Crump's team believes is Nolan says, "Give me my freaking phone. What are you doing?" I'll get to what's actually known about that video in a moment. But the question of who had Nolan's phone, when they had it, and what was on it before it was wiped. Now, data recovery will tell us more. As of this recording, we don't have that yet. But that is going to be at the center of this case. Not motive, not conspiracy, accountability. And here's where it gets even more telling as of right now. Law enforcement still doesn't have that phone as of this recording. The family's attorneys are examining it first because they don't trust Mississippi to handle it fairly. And I say good on them. Good on them. Because how many times have we seen cases where law enforcement has the phone and, the data, just it's corrupt. It doesn't work. Good on you for getting the image of that phone off before someone else can change it. Now, I'm not saying anybody would or there's a conspiracy. I'm just saying good thinking ahead. You've watched a Dateline or two. Crumb says they'll turn it over expeditiously. The sheriff confirmed he's been waiting for it, which means the single most important piece of physical evidence in this case is sitting with the family's lawyers, because the family looked at the investigation happening around them and decided they couldn't count on it. Are they overreacting? Or are they just reacting? Reacting to how they know things get done around these parts. The video is worth addressing directly because it's driven the national conversation and most people don't have the full picture. That clip became the foundation of the foul play narrative online. Millions of views now. Crumb's team maintains it's Nolan's voice demanding his phone back. But the story around that video has gotten more complicated, not less, because of course it has. Javon Williams, Nolan's best friend who was on the island, told TMZ he couldn't say for sure if Nolan was in the clip because the voices were too far away. He said the audio reminded him of a different friend who'd been involved in a separate altercation on a boat. And another friend went on the record with ABC News and said flatly, "That's me yelling," claiming there was no argument about a phone. He says he was telling people to let him off the boat so he could continue a fight and that Nolan wasn't on the island at that point. Crump disputes that. He says multiple people identified the voice as Nolan. So you have the family attorney on one side saying it's Nolan screaming for his phone, and the friends on the other side saying it's someone else entirely. That's not a resolved question. But here's what it means for anyone viewing this case. That video that launched 1,000 theories may not show what most people think it shows. And if it doesn't, the evidence that actually matters is quieter. It's on a phone that was wiped. It's the gap between what Katie says and what the boys say. It's in the silence of a group of friends who hired lawyers instead of answering questions. Let's talk about every institution that was supposed to help this family, because this is where, you know, I start to lose a little more patience too. Around 11 p.m. on July 4th, one of Nolan's friends called the Coast Guard to report him missing. The Coast Guard confirmed the call. Here's their official statement. The initial notification did not require Coast Guard assistance. Let's make sure we got it right. An 18-year-old alone is alone on an uninhabited island at night, no cell service, no shelter, no way to signal anyone. And the United States Coast Guards decided the report didn't require their assistance? What could could that friend have possibly said that made the Coast Guard think this wasn't urgent? Nobody's answered that yet. Nobody's been asked to. Christine called the Jackson County Sheriff's Office around midnight. She and Elmore drove to a McDonald's parking lot to meet with a police officer and give details about their missing son. A McDonald's parking lot at midnight while their kid is alone on an island in the Gulf of Mexico in the dark. The formal Coast Guard search and rescue operation didn't launch until 12:26 p.m., on July 5th, that's more than 12 hours after Christine's report. By 6 that morning, Nolan's father had already gone out on a boat with his football coach to search the island himself. A dad and a coach on a borrowed boat looking in the dark hours before the agencies with helicopters and drones decided, gee, maybe we should go take a look-see. Then Sheriff John Ledbetter told the press there was no foul play suspected. No cause of death has been determined. No autopsy has been completed. No toxicology existed. But the sheriff, setting the narrative, announced to the public that he believed this was an accidental drowning. And maybe it is, but how do you reach that conclusion before you have a cause of death? Christine's reaction, why are we so quick to rush this? And that's the right question. And here's mine. You have a group of friends with conflicting stories, a phone that turns up at one of their houses with wiped accounts, a witness who contradicts their version of events. Is that really the moment you announce no foul play? Or again, incompetence does sound a lot like conspiracy. Just look at Nanos. In the Nancy Guthrie case. A lot of stupid shit out of that person's mouth, too. Person of power, as well. Does anything that come out of their mouth actually matter or make sense or mean anything in the real world? Probably not. But when you're leading the investigation, if you are part of the investigation, if your title happens to be sheriff, your words matter. Sorry, you got to learn that lesson too. I know Nanos wasn't quite up to speed on that one, not used to having people take his words seriously, but when you use your words, big boy, people listen. But you're not suspecting that, but were you just being dumb? Did you just speak out of turn? If you did, look, it's okay. We all do that at times. God knows I do. But you got to step forward then and say, look, I was speaking out of turn. In my gut, I was thinking that, but, you know, there's nothing basing on that other than just my mind. So I'm sorry. That wasn't an accurate statement. We don't really know. Back it up. Back it up. Beep, beep, beep. Back that shit up. If you feel you need to. If you feel that maybe you spoke out of turn, because I hope to God you did, because we just don't know yet. Let's not steer a narrative from an investigative standpoint before we actually have the information to base our investigation on. It's like, well, this is a delicious dinner that you made. Isn't it great? I haven't even started cooking yet. What are you talking about? I mean, it looks good on paper. What do you mean it tastes delicious? You haven't had it yet. So they announced all that before I finished a single interview. Not weird at all. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office is investigating this as a death, not a homicide. The friends on the boat have hired attorneys, and Javon Williams, the closest friend, the one who was actually on the island, the one Nolan pulled aside and told he loved him, told TMZ that investigators have not reached out to talk to him at all. The best friend, not contacted. And look, I want to say this. I am not accusing the friends of doing anything wrong. I'm not. I am accusing the investigation of already being utter shit. Surprise, surprise. That's not an ongoing theme on this show or anything. But you can steer it, you can turn it around, or you can keep leaning into the shit and we'll keep calling you out for it. Whatever you choose, the ball is in your court. Here's a detail that should make every person following this case pay close attention. Ashley Cole, the mother who posted the bilge pump explanation on Facebook, is a sitting Jackson County judge. Jackson County is the jurisdiction investigating Dylan's death. Her stepson was on the boat. Now, I'm not alleging she interfered with anything, but when a sitting judge stepson is one of the last people to see a deceased person alive, and the investigation is running through that same county, the question of independence is not unreasonable. It's more like, shut the F up. If we want to get to the truth, your opinion, not really that matter. Doesn't really matter right now. You're steering a narrative. Doesn't really matter right now. Let's not do that. But again, ignorance is bliss. And sometimes people are just ignorant with the stuff they post. It happens all the time. Whether you're a judge, whether you're an attorney, whether you're, you know, as high as it goes. People seem to have a track record of posting stupid shit online, even if they're the leaders of the free world. So I'm not saying that ain't impossible either. On the morning of July 6, 2 full days after Nolan was last seen, the National Park Service ranger found a body face down in shallow water off the northwest shore of Horn Island. The swimsuit matched. Dental records confirmed it was Nolan. He was found at the same location where he was last seen alive. 2 days, multiple agencies searched that island. Coast Guard helicopters, Cajun Navy boats and aircraft, drones, search teams on the ground. They found nothing on July 5th. The morning of July 6th, a park ranger walks up to the shoreline and boom, there he is. Nolan's father asks the obvious question. If his son went into the water on July 4th, where was his body on the 5th? And you know, if you're in the water for that long, you get waterlogged. And from some of the reporting that I've seen and heard from statements made, I believe, by the family, that doesn't appear to be the case. So where was his body all that time? Now, again, there may be an explanation to all of this. I am not saying that that is not possible. But, I mean, my God, yes, this thing does have all the makings of conspiracy. Is all the makings of what the hell is actually going on here. And the actually going on here may be something really simple, too. I don't know what the answer to that question is, other than a bizarro combination of everybody trying to cover their ass because they don't want to be accused of something that they didn't do. And then with all of that merging together, stories get discombobulated and things don't make sense, and then it looks like there's a cover-up when everybody's just trying to cover their ass. I'm not saying that's good or right, but that can also be how this appears out of the prism. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows yet. Brian Trasher with the Cajun Navy was part of the search. He made a point that I keep coming back to. There were so many people around that somebody would have noticed a distress swimmer. The beach was packed that afternoon, boats everywhere, people everywhere, and nobody saw a 6'1" college athlete in distress in the water. The state autopsy has been completed, but results have not been released as of this recording. The family ordered a separate independent examination by a doctor with no ties to Mississippi law enforcement. Colin Kaepernick helped pay for it. Nolan's body was flown to Washington, D.C. Those results are still pending as of this recording. Crump keeps coming back to the same point. This is a kid who knew how to swim. He was in tip-top shape. He was a superior athlete. Accidental drowning isn't impossible, but it requires answers to every question that I just laid out, and nobody with those answers is being made to provide them. Race has been part of the national conversation around this case, too. Crump has raised it. Sharpton has raised it. It's fair to note that Nolan was the only black person in the group, and this happened in Mississippi, which says a lot. But Javon Nolan's best friend, who is also black, has said publicly that this is not a whole race thing and that the focus on race is pulling attention from the contradictions that actually matter. I think Javon is right. What this, like I said, what this does look like when you line up every piece of it is not a hate crime. It looks like young people who are scared. It looks like a cover-up born out of panic, not malice. What are they covering up? Was there a fight? Did something like that happen? Yes. Does it necessarily involve race? No. It could be young people being young people and being stupid, and somebody got hurt or killed, and nobody wants to be
responsible? Does it have everything to do with race? Maybe, though. I don't know the answer to that question. But I agree. We have to look at the facts and not throw assumptions on. But facts are facts. It also looks like a system that is not pressing hard enough to break through it. Christine had to beg people to stop sharing AI-generated videos, fabricating scenes of her son's death. My God. Welcome to our new world. She's watching her son become a national debate while she still doesn't know what happened to him. Judge Cole's family has received violent death threats, including direct threats against her children. The noise is drowning out the signal, and the signal is simple. A group of friends told a story that does not add up. They had a phone they didn't volunteer. That phone was cleaned, it looks like, before the family got it. That's what's being alleged. And the one independent witness contradicts their version. And then Nolan's own town showed up. Hundreds of people filled the intersection of government and state streets in Oregon Springs on a Saturday evening, all ages, all races, signs, flags, chanting his name. Not a riot, not a spectacle. Neighbors who watched this kid grow up standing in the streets because they want to know what happened to him. That's not a national media narrative. That's a community that doesn't believe the story it's being told. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations have poured in. Tyler Perry is paying for the funeral at the Mississippi Coast Coliseum, a 10,000-seat arena, because that's how many people want to be there. The whole country is watching Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Christine Wansley stood at a podium in Harlem with tears in her face, holding Elmore's hand. We just want to know what happened and why our baby didn't come home. The night before he left for that island, her son made her dinner. Baked salmon, because she'd had a long day. Somebody knows why Nolan's phone ended up at a boat owner's house. Somebody knows why both Snapchat accounts were wiped clean. Somebody knows what happened between 3 p.m. and 11 p.m. on July 4th. Those answers exist. They're sitting in a phone, in a cloud backup, in a memory of someone who was on the boat. The question isn't what happened. The question is how long these kids think they can keep not answering for it. And again, I am not saying anything criminal happened here. But somebody knows more than what is being said. Who and what? That is the question. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Right now, evidence in the Nolan Wells case is disappearing. Let that sink with you for a moment. Not being destroyed by some villain in the shadows, just expiring. It happens in every case. And oftentimes it's weeks, it's months, it's years later where people are like, oh, if only they did this in the early days and weeks of the investigation, we would know X. We would know this. We would know that. Things that can exonerate people if there's anything shady going on here, and things that could also incriminate people if there is something shady going on here. We, as of this moment of this recording, just don't know the answer as to which road that goes down. But evidence tells that story. And it's powerful and it's important that it still exists, that it gets examined, that it gets looked at and isn't not looked at for stupid reasoning like, well, we didn't consider it that type of an investigation at the time. If we did, we would have checked this box. But at the time, we didn't think that, so we didn't. Let's just not go down that road right now. deleted content on a Snapchat server sits in a recovery window measured in days and weeks. Location history on apps gets purged on rolling schedules. Cell carrier records cycle out, and memories, the honest kind, the ones people have before lawyers and group chats and viral theories smooth every story into alignment, those degrade fastest of all. Every death investigation runs against a clock. The question in this case isn't just what happened to Nolan Wells on Horn Island. It's whether the people responsible for finding out are treating the clock like it exists. Because one person treated it like it existed from the very first hours. At 6 o'clock in the morning on July 5th, while every agency with a helicopter was still deciding whether this was urgent enough, Elmore Monsley was on a borrowed boat heading out to Horn Island to search for his own son, a father and a football coach out on the water in the early light doing the job before anyone with a badge showed up to do it. Hold that image. It is not the last time in the story that the family does the state's work. And I'm not saying that this is a rare occurrence where individuals take it upon themselves to do the work of the police. It happens in 80, 90% of the cases we cover. If you're just catching up on this case, here's what you need. Nolan Wells, 18 years old, went to Horn Island off the Mississippi coast with three friends on the 4th of July. The friends came home without him. His phone came home without him. His body was found 2 days later, face down in the water at the same spot where the searchers had already looked and found nothing. The friend's story contradicts the only other witness. Both autopsies are still pending. That's the case. This isn't about relitigating what happened on that island. This is about what should be happening right now while the answers still exist. It begins with a classification decision that most people scroll right past. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office is running this as a death investigation, not a homicide. And now that sounds like a technicality. Right now, it is the whole ball game. And as of this recording, things may have changed in the hours after we did this. As of this recording, that's where it sits. Classification determines tools. A homicide investigation gets search warrants, subpoenas, compelled testimony, seized devices. A death investigation gets requests. Would you like to participate? Could we see that maybe, please? Oh, no? Okay. Oh, have a great day. Heard they got the McRib back. Voluntary cooperation. Please and thank you. The sheriff's office asked the young men who were on the boat to voluntarily surrender their phones. And any investigator will tell you that a voluntary surrender request also functions as exactly that, voluntary. A courtesy notification. We would like your phone. Take your time. You do what you do. Now, I'm not saying that people haven't volunteered devices. I'm not saying that. And I'm not accusing anyone of doing anything inappropriate here. But I'm telling you, there isn't a whole lot to compel specific information, specific evidence that could, in fact, clear people to do so. And it's not so great when a lot of people bunch up, circle the wagons out of fear, not knowing where this could possibly go, thinking, well, I'm protecting myself right now. Well, if there's nothing to protect, honesty is usually the best answer. And the facts will lie where they lie. Here's a trap, and I want to lay it out plainly because it explains almost everything about where this case sits. You can't get search warrants without probable cause. You can't develop probable cause without evidence. And you can't collect evidence when your only tools depend on the goodwill of the people whose stories don't add up. the classification that sounds careful and fair is actually a design. And what that design produces, whether anyone intends it to or not, is a mystery that never gets solved. Meanwhile, look at who has actually been collecting evidence in this case. The family tracked the phone. The family recovered the phone. The family ordered an independent autopsy and flew their son's body to Washington, D.C. because they didn't trust Mississippi to examine it. For good reason. There happens to be a bit of a track record of shittiness there. The family retained attorneys who brought their own investigators from the borrowed boats at dawn to the private autopsy in another city. The pattern has never broken. The people with the least power and the most grief keep doing the work that belongs to the state. So let's talk about what that work looks like, what a serious investigation does in these first days and weeks, the perishable window. Before the answers are gone, before there's a playbook for this. This isn't secret. This isn't exotic. It's standard practice, and every step of it is available to Jackson County right now. It starts with a single piece of paper, federal law. It's called a preservation request. Under the Stored Communications Act, it lets any law enforcement agency send a one-page demand to any tech company requiring them to freeze an account's data exactly as it sits for 90 days, renewable for another 90. No warrant, no judge, no probable cause. It doesn't let investigators read a single message. It just stops the deletion clock. Well, they build a case for a warrant. Snapchat, Life 360, Apple, Google, the cell carriers, every account belonging to every person on that boat, plus Nolan's, plus the young woman he was talking to on the beach. That letter is the single most important action available in this case. It costs nothing. It violates nobody's rights. It should have gone out in the first week. Did it? The public has no way of knowing because the sheriff isn't saying. And that's a problem you're going to hear me come back to. Because from the outside, an investigation moving quietly and an investigation not moving at all look exactly the same. But look like silence. Both of them look like silence. Again, I'm not saying this hasn't been happening. But when you have the sheriff actively saying, well, I think it might be this, and we don't even know anything yet. Well, That kind of, it feels a little nano-y to me, doesn't it, you? A little Sheriff nano-y? It's almost like his kindred spirits over in Mississippi. Here's what else the digital playbook demands. Snapchat servers. When Christine Wansley opened her son's phone and found both his Snapchat accounts completely empty, no photos, no videos, nothing from a packed holiday beach party, that told her something had been done to that phone. But wiped on a device, a handset itself, does not mean gone from Snapchat servers. There is a recovery window for deleted accounts. It is closing while we talk about it. Life 360, the same app Christine used to find her son's phone, keeps historical location data. That history could reconstruct the phone's exact path, timestamped from Horn Island to the house of the family that owned the boat. It gets purged on a schedule. Cell tower records, every phone on that island pinged towers all afternoon. Whose device was where and when? That single data set answers a question at the center of the entire case. Did Nolan's phone leave Horn Island while Nolan was still on it? One timestamp. That's all it would take to settle it. And the public's photos and videos, the sheriff's office asked people to submit original unedited files from the island that day. There's a reason for the word original. Original files carry metadata, timestamps, GPS coordinates. Hundreds of phones on a packed beach were accidentally documenting the timeline of the last afternoon of Nolan Wells' life. That's a map. And if somebody assembles it, Now, the physical evidence, and this is where I want to slow down, because the entire explanation for why four friends left one friend on an uninhabited island rests on a single mechanical claim. The boat was taking on water, a bilge pump issue. That is a checkable fact. I'm not saying it is a fact, but I'm saying it's a checkable fact. If you're stating it as fact, that can be checked. It's a one claim in this whole case you can verify with a screwdriver. A marine mechanic examines that pump and that hull and tells you whether it failed, when it was last serviced, and whether that boat was taking on water at all on July 4th. I'm not saying it wasn't, but I'm saying let's cross our T's and dot our I's. One inspection either corroborates the friend's story or detonates it. The choice is yours. There's no public indication the boat has been examined, impounded, or even photographed by investigators. As far as anyone knows, it's been sitting in a private dock since the day Nolan disappeared, in the custody of the same family whose house his phone turned up at. There's no investigative reason not to inspect that boat. None. And it's not to say anyone is doing anything wrong or criminal. It's just, again, cross the T's, dot the I's. Let's make sure that nothing foul happened here to protect the people who half the country is looking at with a suspicious eye, or to rightfully incriminate them if there is something criminal going on. Watch where people lean right now. But also keep in mind, people lean in ways of fear that are always not in their best interest too. That does also happen. It makes all this very confusing. That's why it's important in a case like this to have an open mind and not go into it saying, here's what I think happened, and just go down that road. I'm going into this, and I hope you're going this, going, here's what should be going on right now. Is it going on right now? So we can truly get facts and answers and not narrative and emotion this way and that way. And there's interviews. Charles Ramsey, the former head of the Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. police departments, laid out the standard on CNN. Everyone gets interviewed individually, one at a time, stories locked in before they can harmonize. That's not aggressive policing. That's just baseline work. And to be fair to the sheriff, Ramsey also said the no foul play statement may have simply been a poor choice of words. And we said that yesterday. It may have been. The accurate version would have been no immediate obvious signs of foul play. Fine, words matter, and maybe that one was a clumsy rather than conclusive statement. But words aren't the issue anymore. Actions are. More than a week after Nolan died, CNN asked Sheriff Ledbetter directly whether all the friends from the boat had been interviewed. He didn't answer. He confirmed witness interviews have been conducted. He's confirmed contact with the FBI. He's confirmed his investigators are now working with the district attorney's office, which doesn't mean a crime occurred, but it does mean prosecutors are in the room. He said public tips have been very productive. But the most basic question about the most basic investigative step, have you talked to everyone who was there? That one. It's silence. And the sheriff has a new message for everyone, demanding answers. His investigators will not be rushed. He told ABC it's essential they not be put on a timetable by people clamoring for answers. Take a year to reach conclusion. Take two. Conclusion should never be rushed. But there's a difference between rushing a conclusion and racing a clock. And the sheriff is conflating them. The preservation letters, the boat inspection, the locked-in interviews, those aren't conclusions. They're collection. The collection has a deadline that no press conference can extend. Careful and fast are not opposites. When it comes to perishable evidence, careful is fast. The agencies that take their time on analysis are the same ones that move within hours on preservation, because they know that once the window closes, there's nothing left to be careful with, Officer Dipshit. And Javon Williams is still waiting on a phone call. Nolan's best friend on the island that day, publicly available, publicly talking, telling TMZ and CNN everything he knows. He says investigators have never contacted him. A willing witness who announces to the world that he's waiting by a phone and doesn't get a call. That's not a resource problem. That's a decision. Don't rush me. No one's rushing you. They're asking you to do your job competently. oh, too much pressure. Sorry, Officer Snowflake. People want you to do your job competently. Huh, what a thought. And you're being held to task. Because we're in a world where we can do this now. We can hold you to task. We can hold your feet to the fire. And every little F up that happens, the world will know about it. Oh, there's not the little comfort blanket of, well, we can hide it over here. Don't say anybody this. Don't do it. That's gone. That doesn't exist anymore. Maybe you've not experienced it in your department yet, but welcome to 2026. Now, just doing it competently is not a big ask. It's called your fucking job. So please do it and stop with the dumbass excuses because they don't read well. Stop with being defensive. Stop with this. Stop with that. It's a big tell. And maybe it means nothing. Maybe it means you're overwhelmed and don't know what the fuck to do. You've never been in this situation before, even though I bet you probably have. Just do your job. That's all. Do your job. Do your job and everyone will be happy. Once excuses start popping up, that's also where the red flags do too. There's also the canvas. Dozens of boats were clustered at the northwest tip of Horn Island on the 4th of July. Every one of those vessels launched from somewhere. Launch records, marina cameras, boat registers, every person on that beach is a potential witness to the last hours of Nolan's life. Reconstructing who was out there is tedious, unglamorous, and completely standard. The sheriff says tips from the public have been productive. Good, but the tips are what you get when you wait. A canvas is what you do when you're actually serious. A rigorous investigation, the full playbook executed fast, is the best possible outcome for everyone, including the friends. Follow me on this. Say what happened on Horn Island was a tragic accident, and it may have been. A kid misjudged the water, a terrible drowning, nothing more than the cell tower records, the boat inspection, the locked-in interviews, and the preserved Snapchat data would prove it. The friends would walk out from under a cloud that is otherwise going to follow them for the rest of their lives. The internet convicted those young men within 72 hours. Only evidence can unconvict them. Their attorney should be the loudest voice in Mississippi demanding this investigation. Instead, they're managing statements. And if this wasn't an accident, the same evidence is the only road to accountability. And every day of voluntary cooperation and official silence narrows that road. Either way, the family should never have had to do any of this. A father on a borrowed boat at dawn, a mother tracking her son's phone with an app because nobody told her where it was, a private autopsy in another city, attorneys and investigators in a press conference, every single piece of the family's parallel investigation is a receipt for an official failure. Christine and Elmore Wansley don't sleep. Christine told CNN, "This was our baby boy. I birthed him." The state's answer to that so far has been a request for voluntary cooperation and a lot of quiet. Mississippi pays a price, too. The history hanging over its case is real. Generations of death investigated with less rigor because of who died. Sheriff Ledbetter cannot erase that history. But he had one chance to defy it. Run this investigation so aggressively and so transparently that nobody could question it. Announce every step. Inspect the boat on camera. Confirm every interview. Instead, the public got no foul play suspected. Because an autopsy existed, or before an autopsy existed, followed by a week of near silence. No foul play. Not going to know what we're basing it on, but I'm going to say that out loud because that's what we do here in Mississippi. Whatever the truth turns out to be, the handling has already written the first chapter of how this case will be remembered. You can turn that around, or you can keep leaning into ignorance. We know the track record of Mississippi. I want to be fair about the unknowns. The FBI is involved. The sheriff confirmed the contact. Prosecutors are in the room. Maybe the preservation letters went out on day one. Maybe the boat was inspected quietly and thoroughly. Maybe every interview is locked into the silence is discipline, not drift. If that's what's happening, then none of this lands on the Jackson County. And the moment real results come out, I'll say so. I'll say, great. You did do it right. You're a shining pillar in the sky of how investigations should be done, and you did it right.
But so far, the evidence and the speak, the circle speak, the side talk speak, the I don't think it's this, I don't think it's that, don't necessarily give me or anyone confidence yet. But again, maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm hoping this can be a turning point and look, damn, wow. The Mississippi has changed. They're not continuing hundreds of years of history of not investigating things properly, especially when the person ain't white. But if it is being done properly and you're just not telling us, okay, well, good. Telling us that you're doing it properly would probably be a positive thing. Don't need all the details. I get that. But just assure them, here's what we're doing right now. But retention schedules don't pause for jurisdictional caution. Somewhere on a server right now sits the data that answers whether Nolan's phone left that island before he did. Who was standing where at 4:30 in the afternoon, whether a bilge pump actually failed. That data has an expiration date. So do honest memories. If this case hardens into a permanent mystery, it won't be because the truth was unknowable. It will be because the people whose job it was to preserve the truth let that window close because they didn't want to be rushed. Elmer Wansley didn't wait for a window. He was on the water at 6 in the morning. Well, the son was still officially missing because that's what you do when it's your child. You go. And Christine, he and Christine have done the searching, the tracking, the recovering, the commissioning, the demanding. They've done everything except the one thing they cannot do for themselves. Make Mississippi treat their son's death like it deserves the full weight of every tool that exists to answer it. Nolan Wells was due at football training the Monday they found him. He told his best friend he loved him on that beach. His parents are still waiting for the first official answer about how their son died. Every answer exists on a server, in a hall, in a phone, in somebody's memory. The clock is running on all of them. Nolan's parents have done their part. The rest is Mississippi's job. Do it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give me your thoughts. We'll continue our conversation there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.